quite an exciting day. We have a huge agenda, so we're going to move through very quickly. And I ask everybody's cooperation in being as brief as possible, no matter what you're asked to do. So we will start with Senate Bill. We will open a work session on Senate Bill 480. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 480 establishes an offense of endangering child safety for operating a motor vehicle with a passenger who is under 13 years old and seated in the front seat. Before the committee are two amendments, the Dash 2s and the Dash 4s. The Dash 2 amendments restore to the exemption from the seatbelt law for persons who are passengers in a vehicle if all seating positions in the vehicle are occupied. The original version of the bill took that out of that exemption out, and the Dash 2 amendments put it back into law. The Dash 4 amendment deletes the requirement that passengers who are under 13 years old must sit in a rear seating position if one is available. So what would remain is the booster seat requirement. It requires children under 1 year of age and all other persons who weigh 20 pounds or less to be properly secured with a child safety system in a rear-facing the booster seat requirement requires children under 8 years of age who weigh more than 40 pounds and are 4 feet 9 inches or shorter to be in a booster seat. And if the Dash 2 and 4s would be adopted, that's the what would remain of the bill.
Okay, Senator Devlin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, since I appeared to create more confusion by giving more details in the last presentation, I'm going to be extremely short. This is a good bill with 480, with the amendments, basically few due to the Dash 2s and the Dash 4s. The law becomes this. You all have this. This is how the law will be presented to the public. This is actually relatively clear. This is what we typically do with traffic safety and child safety laws. This is what the public will see. It's very understandable. Also, you have a letter from the National Safety Board to the chair of the committee explaining what the benefits of this are, and I think they're very clear. The writer of the letter did let out a secret. If you look at the end of the letter, Senator Monroe and I wanted it to be a secret that we're also senators in the Colorado legislature, but I'll leave it at that. But it's a good bill with these amendments, and I'm looking forward to its passage, and I'm hoping you do not have a constitutional problem right now, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. We have a wonderfully cooperative vice chair here who does great work and makes personal sacrifices on occasion.
My flattery will get you absolutely nowhere.
My flattery gets me nowhere. So I'm taking it that we need both the Dash 2 and the Dash 4 amendments. Mm-hmm. Senator Walker, would you please make a motion?
I will. I move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 480.
Senator Walker has moved the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 480. Is there any discussion? Senator Beyer, did you have a problem with those particular amendments? Okay. No objection, so ordered. Senator Walker.
I'll move the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 480.
Senator Walker has moved the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 480. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Walker.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 480 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Bill 480 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Thank you, Senator Devlin, for clarifying that very confusing bill.
The vote hasn't been taken yet, Senator Beyer. I want to express my personal appreciation for Senator Beyer, who, speaking on his behalf, does not support this bill and is willing to move it along for the good of the order. And I assume we will not be anticipating your support on the Senate floor, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Appreciate that also very much.
Without objection, so ordered. Senator Devlin, would you like to carry this bill?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Devlin will carry this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we will now move to Oh, here we go. Right on top. We will now move to Senate Bill 406. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 406 was heard by this committee on February 12th and concerns the appointment and commissioning of humane special agents. The dash twos, is that what we're up to? The dash two amendments replace the original bill, and what they would do is clarify that the governor may commission humane special agents upon request by a humane investigation agency, and that the governor may, for any reason, decommission or refuse to commission a humane special agent. The bill clarifies that humane special agents have the powers of peace officers to enforce animal welfare laws, and it defines humane investigation agency to mean a private, nonprofit animal care agency that has maintained an animal welfare department for at least 5 years and has had employees commissioned as special agents by the governor. The bill also provides that humane special agents serve at the expense of the humane investigation agency, which would be civilly responsible for any abuse of the agent's authority, and it requires the humane investigation agency to contract with the state of Oregon, and that the contract may contain provisions relating to standards of conduct, indemnification, and insurance.
Okay, and we have the amendment. The amendment is...
The dash twos.
Can we have George Okulich maybe come forward and let us know what we're doing here? Anyone you want to bring, George? Hi, Sharon. Bring Sharon on up here. And that just keeps the status quo. Welcome. Just very quickly, if you could, tell us what we're doing here.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is George Okulich here on behalf of the Oregon Humane Society of Oregon. What you have before you is the Dash 2 amendments. This is a bill that we have been discussing for many months. Currently, right now, we have humane special agents being commissioned by the governor's office. It's the current statute under which these agents are commissioned is sort of unclear and needs a little bit of work. We have had Senator Walker put a work group together. We've had some ideas come out of that. Not all the parties were in agreement. We continued to talk to the governor's office of what he thought was best. So we originally went back to the idea of codifying sort of the current practice, sort of clarifying what the governor could do. And what you have before you is the Dash 2 amendments, which is just a very simple sort of little bill or amendment that just says that the governor has the authority to commission humane special agents.
And basically this would maintain the status quo that we've had a number of years ago. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to hold the – I'm going to close the work session and bring this back up later when we have our last committee member here.
I have a question first, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I did participate and hold a work group, and we thought we had it, and the sheriffs didn't make it to that work group for whatever reason. I don't know today. But we had a discussion about these humane special agents using weapons. And I'm seeing here on page 2, line 3, it says the contract may provide for guidelines and policies to be followed by the Humane Investigation Agency and commissioned special agents. Does that allow the contract with the State of Oregon to allow these agents to carry weapons?
Chair Burdick, Senator Walker, right now in the current contract that we have with the governor's office, it says that humane special agents are not allowed to carry firearms. So we anticipated that, you know, in that part of the bill that we would be working with the governor's office to, again, decide what they think is appropriate.
Okay, because you know how I felt about that. I was strongly opposed to these folks carrying weapons.
Okay. And it's my understanding that they can carry other non-lethal forms of protection that they can use for their own safety.
Specifically directed at firearms because regular humane agents are not allowed to carry firearms, and I didn't think these folks should have that opportunity.
Thank you for getting that on the record. Okay, Sharon, did you want to add anything?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for your patience in trying to bring all parties to the table. Oh, and my name is Sharon Harmon, Oregon Humane Society. Thank you again. I know this has been a tough one. I know the community supports it, and I appreciate your effort to try and bring the entire community to the table.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, and I know there's a lot of support out there for the good work that these folks do, and I'm glad we were able to reach, and I want to personally thank Sandra Walker for her efforts on this behalf, too. This was a hard one. Okay, so I'm going to close the work session. We will reopen it later and try to get the votes to move this out. Thank you. Next, we will have... Oh, this one, we also have on this agenda, I wanted to announce, we've got Senate Bill 280 signed up for a possible work session. We are going to move that bill to Monday. And also, we have on the agenda, under work session, Senate Bill 732, which we are going to move till Monday. So if people are in the room on those two bills, you don't need to stay. You can if you want. So we just had Senator Przanski walk in, so we will reopen the work session on Senate Bill 406. And Senator Przanski, this is the Special Humane Officers, and this would allow this would basically maintain the status quo where the governor has authority to appoint these officers. Senator Walker, do you have a motion?
I do. I move the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 406.
Senator Walker has moved the -2 amendment to 406. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Walker.
Move the Senate Bill 406 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation, Madam Chair.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Bill 406 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Would you like a roll call?
Please call the roll.
Senator Cruz.
No.
Senator Pazowski.
Aye.
Senator Walker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Byers.
No.
Chair Burke.
Aye.
So ordered. Senator Walker, would you like to carry this?
No.
You don't have to if you don't
yeah,
want to.
Yeah, I'll do that one.
If you'd like to, you can. Okay. Now, what else do we have for you in here? Is that it for you? Okay. Now we will switch counsel here to Mr. Stanford. And while he's coming up, our next bills will be... we'll do Senate Bill 108, 111, 296, 732, and 1017 in that order. Yeah, that's correct. Excuse me. We're moving 732 to Monday, my counsel reminds me, which I just did. So we will start out with opening a public hearing, actually, on Senate Bill 108.
Senate Bill 108 was previously heard in a different form on April the 3rd. It's been revised. What it does is it creates the Class C traffic violation of operation of a truck without a forward cross view mirror. Again, Senate Bill 108 is revised by the -1 amendment, creates the Class C violation of operating a truck without a forward cross view mirror. The term forward cross view mirror is defined in some as a mirror device that enables the driver of a motor truck to have a clear view of persons or objects within 10 feet in front of the truck. The elements of this offense are either 1A, a person drives on a highway, or a person owns or causes to be driven on a highway. Element 2, a motor truck, and there's a definition, combined weight of 26,000 pounds or less and used for the commercial delivery of packages or property. And then the third element, the truck is not equipped with a forward cross view mirror. There is a specific exception for owners and operators of trucks that certify with the Oregon Department of Transportation that a particular truck does have a clear view of persons or objects within 10 feet in front of the truck and therefore has no need for a forward cross view mirror.
Okay, before we turn to our esteemed panel of witnesses, just let the audience know that this is what is delicately known in the building as a gut and stuff. The original bill had nothing to do with what council just described, but this is a complete replacement of the bill. So, Senator Walker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7, and I really appreciate the state troopers for allowing me to gut and stuff their bill. This is an important bill to me and my constituent, and we had this bill last session. It was Senate Bill 1027, and I will tell you right now that we had six no votes in the Senate, and Senators Beyer and Cruz were two of those six. Even after I amended the bill to take care of their objections regarding farm trucks. And the bill went to the House, and it stayed there and sat in committee, where I do not believe that will occur again. This came forward to me because my constituent's daughter was run over by a UPS truck. She was 7 years old, and it was a horrible, horrible, tragic thing. And I'm going to have their attorney speak to that, Richard Lane, and the need for these cross-view mirrors. Had these simple mirrors been on this UPS truck, this little child would still be here today. She was 7 years old when she was killed in 2001, and I suspect that the UPS truck driver in that accident still wishes that had never happened today. He probably still has nightmares about it, as does the mother and father. So I will turn it over to Mr. Lane, retake my seat up there so I can ask some questions, and we can learn about why this simple little fix would be important to protect the children in our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Richard Lane, and I am an attorney practicing in Portland, and did have the pleasure of representing Mr. and Mrs. Lyons in connection with the wrongful death of their daughter. Just so we're clear, and I realize the committee's got a tight agenda, I'm going to move through some of this material fairly quickly.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
The materials that I've given you, if you turn to page 2, that is the accident scene photograph. This is a situation where the package delivery truck is moving forward, not in reverse. In reverse, we've taken care of those problems. There are mirrors in the back to make sure that their blind spot is identified as they proceed on our streets and highways. The problem is the front of the vehicle, and this is not just a UPS vehicle, but large package delivery trucks that are operating in all neighborhoods. On page 4 of your materials, there is a statement that was written for the committee to Senator Walker from the three primary investigating officers. And I've spoken with all of them, and I'd just like to draw the attention of the committee members to the third paragraph, last sentence there, where the investigating officers report that as part of their investigation, we discovered, and I'm quoting, we discovered a driver could not see a child in front of the truck below 4 foot 7.5 inches from the middle of the cab and below 4 foot 11 inches from the driver's seat. What the investigating officers found is there is a blind spot that prevents the driver from being in the cab and seeing a small child. I noticed one or two around given today, and I was thinking to myself that those are the types of children that are playing in neighborhoods that are completely unseen to the same drivers that are operating in all of our neighborhoods and all of the communities of Oregon. Page 5 and 6 of the materials is some basic demonstration work that I prepared myself for trial. And you can see the mock-up in front of the vehicle. And this is what's called a mirror-like busboy. And it's been described to me as sort of the Cadillac of front visibility enhancement devices. And if I could just step up to the committee. What it does when it's mounted on the front of the vehicle is immediately make objects that are in front and down below visible to the operator. This is the Cadillac. There is other devices available, a little less costly, that are mounted either above the cab so that they show the blind spot in front of the vehicle or mounted on the front bumper area.
Need to get back to your mic, Richard.
These are two devices that are available commercially now that, had they been in place on the vehicle, Kennedy Lyon would be with us today. The rest of the materials that I have given you are a number of other vehicles that have taken upon themselves to install front visibility enhancement devices. We see a picture of a Crystal Springs delivery truck. You can see the busboy mounted on the front bumper area. Garbage trucks operating in the if you go out to Portland Airport and you take one of the shuttles in from the parking lot, you'll find the busboy mounted on the front of the buses to take you from long-term parking. School buses have various types of devices that are available. The most significant that I found is the United States Post Office, another truck that's in all of our neighborhoods. Numbers 11 and 12 of your materials show the relatively inexpensive front enhancement device mounted above the glass of the cab, and you can see from the cab, you can see directly down on page 12. This seems to be a very simple fix that the committee members should be in favor of to make sure that we don't have further injuries or deaths in neighborhoods where kids are playing, because the vehicles that are out there operating in those neighborhoods on a daily basis are unable, as designed, to be able to see kids out there. So with that, I would just be happy to take any questions.
Any questions?
Just one, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Lane. I appreciate you coming up, and I know Ms. Lyons was here last session, and I didn't want to put her through that again. That's a pretty tragic moment to have to relive in her life. Let me, you indicated on pages 7 through 12, those are all trucks that are in our neighborhood. Wouldn't you agree that a package delivery truck such as UPS or Federal Express is in our neighborhood on a regular basis?
Madam Chairman, Senator Walker, on a day-to-day basis, I mean, that's what they're designed to do, is to get into neighborhoods, small cul-de-sacs, small streets where you know kids are playing, running around. This, the situation with Brandy Lyon, she was directly in front of her house. She was on the sidewalk as the package delivery truck moved out from a common driveway after making a delivery and struck her on the sidewalk while she was walking with her bicycle.
And a follow-up, Madam Chair. Also, wouldn't you agree, I've just lost my line of thought, but wouldn't you agree that these delivery vehicles, the people making these deliveries, they are in a hurry to make these deliveries because the more deliveries they can make, the more work they get done, and that's part of the cost of doing business is to do these in a speedy manner?
Chair Burdick, members of the, Senator Walker, members of the committee, I certainly think that the demands placed on all of these package operators operating in the communities is to deliver the merchandise as quickly, as speedily as possible. And I think we've all seen the commercials. You know, they pride themselves. That's how they're trying to secure business, is we will be the fastest. We will move it anywhere in the quickest fashion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions from the committee? We have no one else signed up, so we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 108 and open a work session on Senate Bill 108.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move Senate Bill 108 to the floor of the Senate with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator
I forgot. I had stuffed it.
Uh-oh.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. He's such a good vice chair for me down in my committee. I will move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 108.
Let's move the Dash 1 amendment to the Senate Bill 108. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Senator, do you want a roll call, Senator Byer?
Oh, an amendment?
Yeah.
On the bill.
It just replaces the bill.
Okay. Senator Walker.
Now I will move Senate Bill 108 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Bill 108 as amended to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chair. I will be supporting the bill. I do want to put on the record, I think what we're attempting to do is take care of a safety issue for all drivers that operate these vehicles, whether they're driving fast or not. And I think in this particular case, the victim family came to me, and I referred them to Senator Walker. I don't think it was proven or demonstrated that this particular driver was driving fast. Mm-hmm. I just think the record should reflect that what we're looking at is, no matter what the conditions are, who's driving the vehicle, we want to make sure they have visibility in front of the vehicle, and that's what we're moving forward, and not particularly accusing this individual of doing something wrong in the way of speed.
Okay, thank you for getting that on the record.
I would second that. I just merely mentioned that on the whole, package delivery services are in a speedy business, and that in no way meant that this driver was doing anything out of the ordinary other than delivering a package, but Senator Prozonsky is right. It's whether they're going slow or fast. We need to protect these children out on the streets in our neighborhoods who are just standing on the sidewalk or whatever they're doing, as children are known to do, to run and play.
Okay. Will you please call the roll?
Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Prozonsky?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Byer?
No.
Chair Gordon?
All right. So ordered. Senator Walker, would you like to carry your bill?
I will. Thank you.
Okay. Now, 111. We will open a work session on Senate Bill 111. Council.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. Senate Bill 111 was originally heard on February the 15th here for a work session. It relates to the creation of planning authorities regarding deadly use by police officers. Again, Senate Bill 111 creates planning authorities in each county throughout the state dealing with the use of deadly force by police officers. Each planning authority would consist of certain specific members, one district attorney, two sheriff, three non-management police officer, four police chief, five non-law enforcement member of the public selected by the DA and the sheriff, and six a representative of the Oregon State Police. Under Senate Bill 111, each planning authority should develop a specific plan that addresses certain elements, including education regarding deadly force for officers, attorneys, and the public, procedures in the immediate aftermath of deadly force incidents, procedures for investigating such incidents, a district attorney's discretion to resolve criminal issues, collecting information on officer use of deadly force, and a fiscal impact estimate. Once the planning authority develops and approves an appropriate plan, there must first be a public hearing. The planning authority then submits the plan to the relevant law enforcement agencies within the county. Two-thirds of the relevant law enforcement agencies within a county must approve a plan before it becomes officially adopted. Once this happens, the plan goes to the Attorney General for final approval. It's also a mechanism for private citizens to challenge a plan. Senate Bill 111 also provides specific legislative findings relating to grand juries and to use of deadly force, including that although grand jury proceedings are typically secret, an officer's use of deadly force requires a level of public scrutiny that uniquely justifies limited intrusions into the secrecy historically accorded grand jury proceedings. Based on this finding, Senate Bill 111 authorizes the DA to present facts to a grand jury about incidents involving officer use of deadly force. Such proceedings must be recorded and then released to the public unless the court finds that the public interest in disclosure is outweighed by certain specific factors, in which case the court could redact all or a portion of the transcript. And under consideration today then also is the Dash 2 Amendment, which requires the planning authority to submit the plan to a local public safety coordinating council for review and comment.
Okay. This is the same bill that we passed out of this committee last session with the addition of the Dash 2 Amendment, which requires the local planning authority to submit the public safety plan to the coordinating the local public safety coordinating council. I thought that was a constructive amendment. So are there any questions of council from the committee? And we have people in the audience who can answer questions if committee members have questions.
Madam Chair, I just want to make sure the DAs are still opposed to this bill, even with the amendment.
The DAs is the DA Association.
District Attorneys Association.
And it's my understanding that an individual District Attorney Schrunk is in favor of this legislation. Senator Byer?
I just want to make sure all the committee members receive the details, the summary of the survey that the Attorney General's office did at my request to go out and resurvey the law enforcement agencies around the state. And if they haven't, I do have a copy of that.
This?
No, it was like this. It was just a...
Oh, I just saw that.
A summary. And I think it's very instructive and it talks about what the agencies have done or what they all have done. And as you see, 20 out of 36 sheriffs responded and 64 chiefs out of, we don't know exactly how many there are, but or chose not to, but a pretty good sampling responded. And hopefully everyone has had a chance to look at this, but I think it's important to show that every one of the 79 respondents that answered the question as whether or not they've adopted a written policy dealing with deadly force, they all said yes. Those policies differ somewhat, and then so I think that's very instructive. And then also when you get to the bottom of page one, you see that the deadly force policies in 53 agencies require involvement of outside agencies, and 21 additional agencies don't require a policy but would involve outside investigators as a standard practice. So virtually out of the 86 six agencies roughly that answered the questionnaire, 74 of them were already saying that they were adopted basically these practices without law change. So I think, if anything, it demonstrates a lack of need for this bill.
Well, Senator Beyer and Madam Chair, I mean, I thought it was rather instructive to read under question six. Did your agency submit a death in custody report to the Oregon State Police? And seven of the respondents said, no, we didn't realize until now that federal law requires such reports. I mean, that's part of the problem here, if you don't have consistency across the state.
Maybe I see Mr. Shepherd in the audience. Maybe, Pete, you could come up and address this issue.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pete Shepherd. I'm the Deputy Attorney General, and we did prepare and distribute through the good graces of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association and the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police the survey that Senator Beyer has referred to, and I think the document he's probably referring to is the summary of the survey materials that I distributed to each of you or to your staffs earlier, and I'd be happy to answer questions. I think as far as the descriptions of the questions and the summary goes, it's been accurately presented by the two senators who have spoken to the survey. I guess the only thing I would add to what's already been said in terms of the need is that the survey did reveal that quite a number of agencies, although they have policies regarding the use of deadly force, do not have policies that have all the elements that the bill would require. So, for example, 55% of the respondents simply didn't have an element in their deadly force policy, quote, dealing with education, outreach, and training about the use of deadly physical force for police officers, attorneys employed by the state or local government within the county, and members of the county. And there are several other features of the requirements of the bill that the survey indicates are not, in fact, current practice and would be addressed by the bill.
Okay, and so your position continues to be that this bill is still necessary.
It is, Madam Chair. We support the what I think were originally the Dash 2 amendments, adding the local public safety planning commission coordinating council to the array of folks who would be looking at the plans. That's a sensible addition, and we support that.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair,
Senator Byrd.
I'd just like to thank Mr. Shepherd for doing the survey and writing it up, including me. He asked me for additional comments before the survey went out, and I was able to comment on the questions he asked. I appreciate him doing that because I think it was very instructive to get this information. Thank you.
Thank you. And I appreciate your participating in an issue that you may not even end up supporting, but make it better in the process. So thank you. Okay, any more questions, comments? Okay, Senator Prozanski, I'd like a motion on the Dash 2 amendments, if you would.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments in the Senate Bill 111.
Senator Prozanski has moved the Dash 2 amendments into Senate Bill 111. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Prozanski.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 111 to the floor as amended by the Dash 2 amendments. With the due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer, Senator Prozanski.
Yeah, they already voted for him once.
I know. Has moved Senate Bill 111 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Please call the roll.
Senator Bruce?
No.
Senator Prozanski?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
No.
Chair Brady?
So ordered. Senator Prozanski, would you like to carry this?
Aye.
Okay. Now, I want to catch him. Go catch Robert. Tell him I want to talk to him. Okay, now we will pause for 1 second here while we. We'll be 296. Senate Bill 296, Council.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. Senate Bill 296 relates to delivery of marijuana. It fixes an error last session. ORS 475.900 classifies drug crimes according to the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission sentencing guidelines grid. Presently, Level 8 drug offenses, the most serious drug offenses, include delivery and manufacture of substantial quantities of drugs, delivery, manufacture, and possession as commercial drug offenses, delivery and manufacture within 1,000 feet of a school, certain methamphetamine manufacture offenses, and then delivery of marijuana. The last offense, delivery of marijuana, was erroneously included as a Level 8 offense last session. For example, delivery of cocaine, methamphetamine, heroin, etc., for consideration are Level 6 offenses. What happened last session, delivery of marijuana was bumped up to an 8. Delivery of marijuana elsewhere is classified as a Level 4 offense, even lower. What Senate Bill 296 does is it addresses this error. It removes the reference to delivery of marijuana as a Level 8 offense. Instead, it clarifies that delivery of marijuana then is a 4, but it also clarifies that delivery of marijuana to a person under 18, if the accused is over 18 and at least 3 years older than the underage person, that is a Level 8 offense. It also clarifies that delivery of any controlled substance other than marijuana in Schedules 1, 2, and or 3 to a person under 18 is also a Level 8 offense. And the Dash 2 amendment is what should be under consideration today because it fixes a couple of erroneous statutory references that were in the original bill.
Glad to see that, Madam Chair, because my notes from our hearing on 12907 says everyone is confused on this bill, so we'll need to speak with the drafter. So that is the Dash 2, and the Dash 3 is not being entertained?
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay. This is basically to fix a little problem that we inadvertently caused in the last session's meth package. It was a very comprehensive bill, and we just, as we were reorganizing the drug statutes, we got one little thing wrong, and we're fixing it here. So, Senator Beyer, we have before us the Dash 2 amendments, right?
Correct.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments into Senate Bill 296.
Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 2 amendments into Senate Bill 296. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, we also entertain the Dash 3s?
No.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 296 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved Senate Bill 296 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. I will carry this bill. Okay, now we're going to switch counsel and switch chairs for a moment.
Reopen your work session.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Reopen the work session on Senate Bill 111. Call on Senator Krasanski.
Senator Burdick, what I'd like to do is make a motion to reconsider the vote that we passed Senate Bill 111 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Krasanski has moved that we reconsider the vote by which we passed Senate Bill 111 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, objection, so ordered. Senator Krasanski, we're looking for a motion to...
I'd like to just put on the record. Madam Chair, the reason I've asked for this to go forward is to reconsider the vote. It appears that we had a requirement, a referral to Ways and Means, and that was not the motion I made, and so it sounds like what's in order based on what the President has required for us to send this to Ways and Means. So accordingly, I'm now making a motion to send Senate Bill 111 as amended to Ways and Means based on the subsequent referral that we had received from the President's office.
Thank you, Senator Krasanski. My apologies for frightening the audience here. Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Senator
Krasanski.
Aye.
You're
still
no? Aye.
No.
You were going to change.
Aye. So ordered.
I do sometimes.
Okay, now we're going to switch chairs and switch councils to take up two bills, Senate Bill 279 and Senate Bill 351, which Senator Beyer will be leading the discussion on these two bills.
Are these work session only?
This is Thursday
afternoon. I'm in the Senate, right?
I think so. Are they work session only, or are they public hearing or work session only?
I think so, but they are gotten stopped, so I think we should have a hearing on that, okay?
No, we're not in
this work session.
Okay, the list of work sessions only on the agenda.
Okay, but we should have people come up and testify. In other words, let me go to the bill.
We'll open
a work session on Senate Bill 279.
Chair, members of the committee, I think this is a Bill 279. The amendments, actually, excuse me, it's there is a set of amendments before you, but I don't think the chair planned to move on them because they were relate to a bill that was in the House. It relates to legal services. We just got the amendments today, but I do understand there are people who would like to testify in 279 as is. I believe Susan Grebby has someone from the Oregon State Bar that would like to testify. This repeals an obsolete provision concerning jury trials in county courts as set forth in ORS Chapter 5. One of the arcane functions that county commissioners have and that's exercised in two counties, they actually exercise judicial powers, particularly in juvenile matters. And for over 50 years, there's been a right to have jury trials, but they don't have jury trials. This would remove the provision.
Thank you. Susan, would you like to be very brief and tell us a little bit about the bill?
Thank you, Chair Beyer. We'll be very brief. Susan Grebe for the Oregon State Bar, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. I have with me Gina Johnny, who is here to address the substance of the bill, and she will be very brief. Thank you.
Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Gina Ann Johnny. I am a member. I have been a member of the Oregon State Bar since 1987. I'm currently in private practice in Salem, focusing on commercial litigation and loan work. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 279 as originally drafted. 275 just simply seeks to delete an obsolete provision in ORS Chapter 5. ORS 5.110 provides for juries in county courts. County courts were authorized in the Constitution, Oregon Constitution, for very specific purposes. Those purposes have been narrowed over the years. And in fact, for years, county courts have had no jurisdiction over cases that can even be decided by juries. As a result, ORS 5.110 serves no purpose. While at one time there were county courts in all of Oregon's 36 counties, only 7 county courts now exist. In counties where a county judge's judicial function even still exists, it is limited to juvenile and probate matters. There is no constitutional or statutory right to a jury trial in those matters, and as a result, there's no purpose for 5.110. Removing this provision will have no effect on county courts, still in existence, and will help remove an obsolete provision from our statutes. I urge the community to move this bill with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Questions?
I like removing statutes.
Unfortunately, Senator Cruz, it's a very short statute.
I know, but it's still better than adding.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we are in work session.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 279 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Bill 279 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Brzezinski is right outside. I don't know if he wished to vote or not, but is there any objection to the bill?
No.
Seeing none, so ordered. And we'll let Senator Cruz carry it.
Sure. I can probably understand this one.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 279. Open a work session on Senate Bill 351.
Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 351 basically requires the Oregon law enforcement agencies to have written policies regarding missing persons and to have specific procedures for investigating missing persons. You have before you, in front of you, the Dash 4 amendments. Campbell is here to discuss the amendments, as is Maura Gross from Senator Brown's office. This is a consensus amendment that I've worked out over the last several weeks. And there's also a third person up there, Mr. Chairman of the committee. I'm not too sure who it is, but
I think it's the new and improved Campbell.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, Chair Burdick, and members of the committee. I brought the big gun in to help me today.
I see that.
The amendments that you have before us are before you are a consensus amendment. As you recall, when we testified before, we were testifying to amendments that at the time were not before the committee. As a result of the hearing, we made some additional adjustments that are also reflected in the amendments. They are the Dash 4 amendments that are before you. The first is in line 5. It simply creates a clarification that the way Native American remains are treated are unique and are dealt with in a unique fashion. We wanted to make sure that we didn't create any inadvertent problem with the way statute currently covers that. Then you'll see in Section 2 language clarifying the written policy portion of the bill. And as you recall also during our discussion, Council helped us to understand that we could not bind these particular policies to entities that were nonprofit, even if they're regarded as the policy best practices body in any profession. We couldn't tie state law to them. So you'll see that we've changed this from tying them directly to allowing them to consider those policies as they develop their own. And that's recorded both in Section 2, dealing with the missing person policies, and also then when it deals with the issues related to the medical examiners that you will find on page 3 of the amendment, and that is in beginning of line 3, you'll see that we also do not tie them directly to those standards but allow them to consider them as well. As I mentioned before, this is a consensus amendment, and we appreciate the committee's work. We did have one additional change that was made related to the medical examiner policy that Senator Beyer recommended. In the original bill, there was the word "the" in front of current policy that seemed to tie the medical examiner to a policy that might exist at the time that the bills passed. What our intention was to allow them to stay current with policies as they change. That "the" was removed, and we believe that's addressed the concern of Senator Beyer. In addition, medical examiner, I believe, submitted a letter, Senator Beyer, to you regarding your concern regarding the language involving the time the medical examiner has to actually, once they begin an investigation and do the analysis, the timeline they have before they have to go up with the information for the purpose of NCIC so that others can be able to identify that based on the profile they put up for law enforcement agencies around the United States. And that letter, I believe, was distributed to all of the committee members as well. So with that, Chair Burdick and members of the committee, the dash four amendments.
Mr. Chair, are you ready for a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Burdick. I was looking at Kevin, I'm sorry, I don't have that letter with me. I believe you. It's not in my bill file. It must be locked in my office somewhere. But
with your permission, you want to take a quick look, or
I would like to have it in my file. If you could give it to Ken, if you get it. The rest of the committee has received it, or not for the medical examiner.
I don't know what's in my file either.
It does clarify an issue that I, in reading the bill, as in the section 8, if I remember right, is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
I went back to them after the hearing to ask for clarification because the way I read the bill, under current law, the medical examiner has 30 days after they can't identify a body to do this report and get the information up on the, whatever it's called, the system. They disagree with that. I'm assuming the letter, if it's what you indicated when we talked in the hall about it, the letter is going to indicate that the statute is unclear. It could be read either way, but their current practice is that they think it's 30 days from the time they receive a human remains, not 30 days from the time that they can't identify. So.
That's correct, Senator Beyer. And the importance of that is that obviously they want to get this information up as quick as possible. And most of the time they're able to put that information up early. But in situations where it's a difficult case, they want to make sure the profile actually helps investigators that are around the United States trying to identify. They want to make sure they have the most complete profile possible. All that has to take place within 30 days, even if they haven't completed their investigation. At the 30-day point, they have to go up with it. And so it is the shorter timeline that they currently practice under.
So anyway, I just want to get clear for the record that's how they do it. And the statute is, as drafted, is confusing, but if that's their practice, we don't want. I won't speak for the committee. I didn't want them to have to stop after a certain point in time while they're still doing an investigation and put the information out when they may yet be able to identify the body they don't know. So I think it's important we get that clarified. Senator Burdick, motion for the on the dash four amendments.
I move, Mr. Chair, the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 351.
Senator Burdick moves the dash four amendments in the Senate Bill 351. Is there any discussion on the motion? Objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the Senate Bill 351 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Burdick has moved Senate Bill 351 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion?
Only. Chair, I think you would make a great carrier for this bill.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, it is Take Your Daughter to Work Day, and I would like Mr. Campbell to have his daughter identify herself for the record because she's just adorable.
Thank you. Claudia, you want to say your name and write in here, please? Or don't fail me now. Just say your. This is Chloe. This
Chloe.
Is Chloe. She's 6 years old. She's an excellent reader, and she's my sweetheart. Thanks
very
for being
nice
with
to
me.
Meet you, Chloe.
Mr. Chair, I happen to have a six-year-old as well who's my sweetheart, so I know exactly where you're at.
Thank you.
The only thing I would say is that Senator Walker does actually take her child to work day.
Oh, not just your daughter. Well, you know, my kids are big, and they've only given me grandpuppies and not grandbabies yet. So.
And, I'm grateful for small miracles.
My boys would rather go to school than go to work with their father. And most days I can't say as I blame them. Are there any objections to the motion before, which is the new Senate Bill 351 as amended to the floor of a due pass recommendation? Seeing no objections, to order, and I will carry the bill.
Very much.
Close the work session. Okay. Unless Senator Brown was you wanted to carry the bill.
Okay.
What do you want to do on the minutes? I think there's any Miller's objection.
Yeah, we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 277. Council.
Chair, members of the committee, Amy Miller is here. It replaces the term child with ward in Oregon's dependency code. When a person is under the age of 19, is under the jurisdiction of the juvenile court and thus a ward of the court. Amy Miller is here, and I don't remember the other lady's name who also works with her. But
and what bill is this?
277.
Right, and you have the dash one amendments in front of you, which replace the bill.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. With your permission,
can you speak up?
Sorry, I'm Amy Miller with the Juvenile Rights Project. With your permission, I'd like to bring up Lisa Kay, who's a staff attorney at the Juvenile Rights Project.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lisa Kay. I'm an attorney at the Juvenile Rights Project. The dash one amendments to Senate Bill 277 make a very simple yet very important change to the juvenile code. It changes a word in the guardianship statute to make the guardianship statute consistent with the rest of the juvenile code. It changes the word child to ward. Ward has a very specific definition in the juvenile code, so it's very important that the guardianship statute include the word ward instead of child. The dash one amendments fix an oversight that happened in the 2003 legislative session. During that session, there were two bills through the Oregon Law Commission. One was Senate Bill 70, which enacted many of the guardianship procedures that are in the dash one amendments. The other bill was Senate Bill 69 that defined particular terms in the juvenile code. One of those terms was ward. So all of the other statutes in the juvenile code were corrected to include ward in the appropriate places, but because Senate Bill 70 passed during the same legislative session, it was not fixed to be consistent with Senate Bill 69. These dash one amendments do that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there any discussion from the committee or any questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, I have no issues with this. I just like the word child better than ward.
Me too, but I guess it has a legal justification.
Yes.
Huh?
I understand that. I just
Okay. That's on the record, Senator.
Here,
Senator Beyer.
Just wondering how this is all going to fit in, or if it's going to make any changes by the dependency stuff that was already passed at this committee. Some of which is passed before, some of which is in Ways and Means. If this is going to be affected by that at all, if there's going to be conflict amendments, different statutes, just.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't know of any other conflict with the other dependency bills. We've been monitoring the other dependency bills, and because this just deals with the guardianship provisions and just changes the word child to ward, I don't think that there will be any.
So these statutes weren't amended by the other dependency bills that we passed through this committee then?
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, that's a great question. No, not to my knowledge. I don't think so. None of the guardianship bill statutes were amended. It was basically around the hearings provisions, placement provisions, but not specifically these statutes.
Okay. I think that's true.
Okay.
Mr. Travis in the back agrees.
Pardon?
Mr. Travis in the back agrees with that assessment.
Is he nodding again?
Yes. Up and down nod.
Very effective nod. Okay. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments into the Senate Bill 277.
Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 277. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 277 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved Senate Bill 277 to the Senate floor as a due pass recommendation. With a due pass recommendation, discussion, objection, so ordered. Senator Cruz is our dependency specialist. Would you please carry this?
I'd be glad to.
Even though you don't like the word.
Well, I may even say that on the floor.
You can, Senator Cruz, because we have freedom of speech on the floor of the Senate.
Sometimes.
Pretty much. Really? Even in the committee, Madam Chair.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 856. Council.
Chair and members of the committee, 856 has a prior referral to Ways and Means Committee, creates a smart crime task force. You have the Dash 2 amendments in front of you, which reduce it from 7 members as originally proposed to 6 members, removing the Attorney General, Chief Justice, and giving one additional appointment to the governor.
Okay. Committee, this is a bill that was proposed by Representative Shields to try to have some kind of an organized structure to look at how we're handling our criminal justice system. The bill's been through a couple of iterations. The Dash 2 amendments give 2 appointees to the governor, 2 to the speaker, and 2 to the president for this Smart on Crime Task Force. The Dash 1 amendment, as I understand it, gave 1 to the governor and 2 to the speaker and 2 to the president. Either one is acceptable to me. This one is a little bit more acceptable to the governor for obvious reasons. And so this is going to Ways and Means, and I would like to get it down there. So I think I would prefer the Dash 2 amendment to this bill.
Madam Chair, I would move the Dash 2 amendment as Senate Bill 856.
Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 856. Is there a discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I would prefer this bill move without recommendation. I don't know if that's the wish of the Chair. I will support moving it into Ways and Means either way. And the reason I say that is not that I don't think that this we need to look at this issue, but and my feeling is there's nothing this task force can do that can't be done without spending the money to create a special task force to do it. In fact, I, with conversations with you, know that we are all interested in looking at sentencing things in the interim. And I think that's appropriate place for them is the ways or the Judiciary Committee, Interim Judiciary Committee, special work group of that committee or something like that. I will move the bill to Ways and Means, however you prefer, with or without a due pass recommendation, but know that if the bill does make it from there to the floor, I won't support it on the floor because I don't think we need it.
Okay, Senator, and I totally understand. I would prefer a due pass recommendation just to get the attention for this bill, but I am working with all parties to just make sure the work gets done, and I tend to agree with you on the issue of task forces in general. On this issue, I would like to highlight it with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 856 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved Senate Bill 856 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Thank you. Okay. We will now open a work session on Senate Bill 276.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 276 approves
Senate
the
bill.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 276 approves the amendments made to ORS 213004-0001 by the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. You have the dash four amendments in front of you. And Mr. Prince is in the audience to explain the amendments if that needs to be done. I did talk to Ann Christian, who called me, and she tells me that Amy Alkamich, who had to go to Portland in a medical emergency, reviewed the amendments and are actually supportive of the amendments. Mr. Prinz,
okay. Mr. Prinz, would you like to come up and refresh us on these? Committee, the reference to Ms. Alkamich, initially the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association spoke out and against this bill, but now they are in favor of it.
That's correct. For the record, Craig Prinz, Criminal Justice Commission. Amy couldn't be here because I guess she had a medical issue with her family. I actually went to the OCDLA's legislative committee. We talked about it. We talked about this bill. Judge Marcus did. They ended up supporting the bill. It's my understanding that she just was not able to be here. And frankly, I don't know if she was able to talk to any of the members about that. So to if that's regarding that, that is correct, though they support the bill now. And the dash four, I found it's difficult to amend a rule and get the legislature to approve it all at the in the middle of the session here. So basically, the dash four, what it does is it would approve the temporary rule that we filed. And then it would direct the Criminal Justice Commission to make that rule permanent. It has to be a permanent rule or else it'll go away in 180 days. And then Section 2 would direct the Criminal Justice Commission to study this change in the guidelines. And again, this is the risk assessment tool issue that we talked about, I think, a week ago. We would study it. We would report to the Interim Judiciary Committee by January 1, 2011. And then Section 3 of the bill is basically a sunset but it's a sunset of a rule. So that's why it doesn't look like a normal sunset. It directs the commission to take the rule back to what it was prior to this amendment, and that was part of the advisory committee's request, that they wanted this to be something that went away on its own. And then Section 4 says that the amended version of the guidelines rules apply to crimes that are committed on or after January 1, 2008. And Section 5 makes an emergency clause, and again, that's so that we can get a legislative approval of the temporary rule while it's still effective. If we waited till January 1, we were concerned that it would go away, the temporary rule.
Now, as I understand it, this rule allows some flexibility in parts of the sentencing grid, but it also increases the sentence.
That's correct. If you look at the what it does is, I don't know if Jen handed out the temporary rule itself. If you look at the grid itself, basically what it does is it allows in these two blocks here, these two blocks here, and then these six blocks here that are above and below the dispositional line. It allows a judge the ability to either apply a probationary or prison sentence as the presumptive sentence, and directs the judge to consider a risk assessment score in making that decision. However, it's discretionary, and that's necessary because of the Blakely issue. I talked to the OCDLA Legislative Committee about that, and I let them know that there's currently folks in these grid blocks above and below the line that are going to prison now. And I think when they saw that and they realized that, I think that helped them to understand that we're trying to see if we can use that for the people who are most likely to go out and commit a new crime and reoffend. And so that's what we're going to try to do with this risk assessment.
Okay. It's really an interesting process. I think, probably the sunset is appropriate. And is it your understanding that the Criminal Justice Commission itself supports this? Obviously, you're here.
Yes. Madam Chair, we voted and they approved this.
Okay. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple questions. One, And I missed the first hearing on this, but we did talk in my office about the same time. But at that time, you said the other people in your work group were supporting the concept, that, and that was speaking to the Dash 2 amendments.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any enough substantial changes into the Dash 4? Has it got the criminal justice or defense attorneys on board and kicked somebody off board?
Actually, Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, actually, no. I know you weren't here for the hearing. Actually, the Dash 4, actually, the only substantive change was one on line 17 and 18, and it's actually one that Mr. Dole wanted and reminded me of, which is the Dash 2 said we would study recidivism, and he reminded me that the 919 bill itself said we would study how this risk assessment tool could reduce criminal conduct and the crime rate. That's the only change other than all of this, you know, making sure that the temporary and the permanent rule and all of that are there. So that was actually for Mr. Dole.
Okay, thank you. And then another question, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
And maybe not as much as a question as a comment, and Craig, you and I talked about this when you came and talked about this issue, is that, you know, I see the sentencing grid as we currently have it today as punishment for crimes. And I think this is a good thing to study, but my fear is it will be looked at as an assessment of, you know, to commit new crimes, recidivism assessment, where, so I think it would be more appropriate to talk about this in addition to a sentencing grid, in addition to punishment, you know, because you, in my opinion, we put people in jail for punishment for a crime they've committed, not as a deterrent to commit a future crime. So I think it's a good thing to look at, but I think you need to keep separate that we have to punish people for the crime they've did in addition to assess them for the risk of a future crime. And the two should be looked at together, not as, you know, one instead of the other.
But within the existing sentencing grid, I mean, just if the probation is the presumptive sentence, then that's defined as a punishment. I mean, if they violate it, they end up in jail. And isn't the purpose of this, I mean, the punishment, and I agree with you, I mean, obviously incarceration is a worse punishment, but if you can focus the resources on the people who are most likely to reoffend.
And I agree those people should stay in jail longer.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that people who have committed a crime should not do jail at all.
Right. And Madam Chair, Senator Beyer have talked about this, and there's places on the grid where this would be inappropriate to look at, I believe, because the nature of the crime is so severe. The issue is mostly to focus on the accountability for that crime, and I think that's what Senator Beyer and I had talked about, and the advisory committee, I think, we talked about that at length, and that's why we agreed that we really wanted to look at this area where these are not the more serious crimes, and these are ones where the guidelines themselves have them, you know, this would be the place to look at this, and not in a place where, you know, there's always accountability and public safety, and we have to make sure we're dealing with both. And I think Senator Beyer and I actually agree on that to a great extent.
Okay. Other discussion? Thank you. Senator Beyer, would you like me to have an alternative person move?
No.
Okay. Senator Beyer, the Dash 4.
I'll move the Dash 4 amendments into Senate Bill 276.
Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 4 amendments into Senate Bill 276. Any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, does this bill need to go to Ways and Means?
This does not go to Ways and Means, I believe.
There's no prior referral, Madam Chair. Senator Beyer, to Ways and Means.
I believe this does not have a fiscal impact.
There's no prior referral, but I think Mr. Prince would be the best one because he does remember we are replacing the bill.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Craig Prince again. My guys are working on the fiscal right now, and it's obviously very awkward for me to do the fiscal on the bill that I'm asking you to move. So I'm going to work with Legislative Fiscal Office closer, frankly, than I ever would, because I don't want to have an appearance of impropriety. The issue that we're looking at and why it's taking a while is there's people going to prison in those gridlocks now. What I need to be able to figure out, and it's hard to figure out in the data, is why. Is it because of a repeat property offender statute or something else? if those people are being sentenced to prison in those gridblocks now, I think we can make this prison bed neutral, basically, where you'd say we take the same number of people going to prison and we look at the risk assessment score and we make it a cutoff. So, but I will work very closely with legislative fiscal, and I'm sensitive to the, this is awkward for me in trying to figure out the fiscal, but I honestly don't know yet if it will have.
Well, do you expect something? Because if we
yes.
send this to the, if we send this to the floor, it's my understanding that if a fiscal turns up, then it will go
yeah,
to
the president. The president could take and send it. I just,
no,
because of our conversation,
yeah.
you indicated that it would likely have a fiscal
right.
impact. And so I just assumed it
would. Yeah, that's what, that, and that's what I talked about with the, you know, when we looked at that closer and realized, you know, there are a lot of them going. So I'm going to work on that with Legislative Fiscal Office, and I assume if it does need to go to Ways and Means,
it'll get there.
It'll get there.
It'll get there.
Okay.
One way or another.
Thank you for the discussion. Any other discussion?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 276 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved Senate Bill 276 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I will carry this bill if it gets there. And if not, somebody in Ways and Means will carry it. Okay, we will pause for a moment and switch councils and get Mr. Stanford back up here for the last two bills.
What happened with 864? Kid?
Oh, I'm sorry, we moved it. No, we're not going to do anything with it.
864.
Yeah, we're not. If we have time, we'll have a little discussion, but it's last. Okay. We will open a work session on, where's the dog? On Senate Bill 438. Council.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. Senate Bill 438 is back from a previous hearing on February the 12th for work session today. It relates to the misdemeanor of hindering an assistance animal in the second degree. Under current ORS 167.352, it's a Class A misdemeanor to intentionally or knowingly interfere with, injure, or attempt to injure an assistance animal, a search and rescue animal, or a therapy animal. Senate Bill 438 removes assistance animals from ORS 167.352, and it creates a special statute dealing specifically with the new crimes of first and second degree hindering an assistance animal. Second-degree hindering, a Class A misdemeanor, provides two primary changes to present law. First, it lowers the mental requirement from intentional or knowing to reach persons that act with criminal negligence originally, but the Dash 1 amendment has switched that mental state from criminal negligence up to recklessness. Second, and then perhaps most significantly, Senate Bill 438 allows for the prosecution of dog keepers when the person's dog injures or interferes with an assistance animal. Present law appears to be limited to criminalizing only human actions. In sum, the elements of the new offense of second-degree hindering are, 1, with recklessness, 2, without provocation, 3, a defendant injures, disables, interferes with, jeopardizes the safety of an assistance animal, or the individual fails to prevent his or her dog from doing the same, and 4, the defendant knew or should have known that the other animal was an assistance animal. An offense rises to hindering in the first degree, a Class C felony, if either of the following is true. The defendant either acted intentionally or the defendant had at least two prior related convictions. In addition, Senate Bill 438 amends ORS 167.320, first degree animal abuse is that statute, to include causing the death of an assistance animal or failing to prevent one's dog from causing the death of an assistance animal. It also modifies ORS 346.687, which deals with civil remedies available to owners of injured or disabled assistance animals. For each of the new amended crimes, Senate Bill 438 allows a court to impose reasonable restrictions on the offending dog consistent with ORS 609.990-6. Such restrictions can include sterilization or putting the dog to sleep. Senate Bill 438 also expands the definition of dog that is a public nuisance by including dogs that injure or disable assistance animals. And again, there are two amendments for consideration today. They are not mutually exclusive. The Dash 1 is what I previously alluded to. It changes the mental state of the crime from with criminal negligence to recklessness. And then the Dash 2 amendment removes non-economic damages. which those are defined as subjective non-monetary losses such as pain and suffering, emotional distress, humiliation, loss of consortium, comfort, injury to reputation. It removes non-economic damages from the existing statute regarding what a person with physical impairment can recover in any sort of a civil lawsuit against the owner or keeper of a dog that injures or disables an assistance animal. An impaired person thus would only be able to recover economic damages, which are objectively verifiable monetary losses such as lost wages, medical bills, etc.
Okay. Committee, the purpose of this, and I'll turn it over to Senator Krasanski, who's worked quite a bit on this, but the purpose of this is to really tighten up the protections for the tremendous economic value that these animals have. They cost a lot to train. If one of them is injured or traumatized, they just don't become effective assistance dogs anymore. We had, as you recall, we had one of our most dog-friendly hearings, certainly, a couple months ago on this bill. And it's my preference that we have both the Dash 1 and the Dash 2 amendments to make it very clear that we're strengthening protections for these animals, but particularly in the economic area because they are so costly to train and maintain. Senator Krasanski, did you want to comment further on this?
Madam Chair, I think Council went over it pretty well. Those two amendments will, in fact, tighten and I think make it a much better bill and make certain that those type of damages can be recovered and at the same time make certain the person who is going to be held accountable is actually hitting a threshold that is that's not the lowest at this point, one that actually takes a little bit more knowledge that they were placing the animal at risk based on their conduct or their animal's conduct. And it seems like it's I hate to use the word compromise, but it just seems like it makes it much more a sound and tight bill to address all of the concerns I think the committee had raised during that public hearing. And it's one that will definitely give more advance for taking care of the owner and the dog or the service animal, and at the same time making certain those that are brought through the system as defendants are held to a standard that we believe is appropriate.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Krasanski, and thank you for your work on this. I really appreciate it. Senator Beyer, I'm not sure that you want to make a motion on this, but if you do, I have two amendments here and a bill to move.
Madam Chair,
or Senator Krasanski would be happy to if you don't want to.
Madam Chair, I will not object to the amendments, but I will not support the bill. So.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and move the amendments then?
I move the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 438.
Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 1 amendment into Senate Bill 438. Any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer?
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments into Senate Bill 438.
Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 2 amendment into Senate Bill 438. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Madam Chair.
Senator Krasanski.
I move Senate Bill 438 as amended by the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s to the floor with a D-pass recommendation.
Senator Krasanski has moved Senate Bill 438 as amended by the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments to the Senate floor with a D-pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the work that you've done on this bill, specifically the two amendments. But what we're still looking at here is the level of proof to prove this crime is still actually getting lower, not higher. The amendments takes it higher than the printed bill, but it still is a reduction over current law. Current law is knowingly, so this is taking it from knowingly to recklessly, which is a lower standard to prove. The removing the non-economic damage piece in both this amendment and current law is an improvement over current law. But we still have a bill here that we're talking about criminalizing the act and prosecuting a person for an act of a dog or other animal. And that dog, we still have still use the words of without provocation injures, attempts to injure, disables, attempts to disable, interferes with the work of, or jeopardizes the safety of. Those are very vague terms, and as we heard in the first hearing, would attempting to injure or interfere with, if a dog is barking at a guide dog, is that interfering with the work of that guide dog, and could that be then a felony? I think it is just too broad still, Madam Chair, my support.
Thank you for those comments, Senator Byron. This will be moving through the other chamber, and I'm sure it will be getting further discussion. Thank you. Any other discussion? Call the roll, please.
No.
Aye. Mr.
Walker?
Aye.
Mr.
Byron?
No.
Aye. Senator Posnanski, would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Okay, last bill that we're going to talk about today is Senate Bill 1017. Council.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. Senate Bill 1017, again, was previously heard on March the 16th and is here for work session. I'm going to be discussing only the dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 1017. Senate Bill 1017 relates to the reporting of the crime of aggravated animal abuse and the link between animal abuse and child abuse. For example, that studies, number of studies suggest that persons who abuse animals are highly likely to also abuse children. ORS 167.322 details the existing Class C felony of aggravated animal abuse. This offense involves either the malicious killing or intentional torture of an animal. Under ORS 686.455, again, existing law, a veterinarian is required to report suspected aggravated animal abuse to a law enforcement agency anytime the veterinarian has either come into contact with the animal or come into contact with the person suspected of committing the abuse. ORS 686.465 provides civil and criminal immunity for any veterinarian who in good faith makes such a report. Senate Bill 1017 expands the class of persons who can report such suspected abuse without fear of lawsuits or prosecution from merely veterinarians to also include any, quote, public or private official, close quote. However, there is one very significant distinction. Veterinarian reporting of aggravated animal abuse is mandatory, but public or private official reporting under Senate Bill 1017 is merely discretionary. If the official chooses to report, then the official does not face civil or criminal litigation. Nothing happens to the official for declining to report. The term public or private official in Senate Bill 1017 mirrors the definition of public or private official in existing ORS 419B.0053. That's the mandatory child abuse reporting statute. The term public or private official thus includes, in relevant part, or in some part, physicians, dentists, school employees, police officers, clergy, optometrists, social workers, attorneys, firefighters, and members of the legislature. This class of persons presently has a mandatory child abuse reporting obligation under Oregon law, ORS 419B.010. An official's failure to report child abuse is a Class A violation, again, under existing law. But under Senate Bill 1017, there is no penalty for such officials who choose not to report aggravated animal abuse. It just insulates them from liability.
Committee, you're familiar with this bill. I've been struggling for a couple of sessions, and although I work on a lot of animal issues, to the chagrin of some, this is a bill that's primarily aimed at child abuse. And the inspiration for this bill came from a national group, a prosecutor's group that specializes in child abuse issues, and they did an extensive report on the link between animal abuse and child abuse, and specifically that abused children are sometimes able to talk about the abuse of the family dog, and they are not in fact able to talk about their own abuse. So that was the sentiment behind the bill. The initial version had mandatory reporting for both animal abuse as it would with child abuse. And I just decided after a lot of reflection that most people who were in these lines where they would be reporting child abuse, who are mandatory reporters, are people who want to do the right thing, and the mandatory reporting requirement might be onerous. So this will provide anybody who makes a report in good faith, it'll provide them with immunity if they make that report in good faith on aggravated animal abuse. So I would hope that we could send this bill to the floor after a couple of sessions. And I can't find my amendment, Council.
Dash 4, right?
It's a dash 4. I know Senator Beyer wants to continue this on in perpetuity. So that's the focus of it. And it's our last bill that we're going to talk about. So I have the -4 amendment, and I don't
Madam
think Senator Barr will.
I'll move the -4 amendment.
Senator Walker has moved the -4 amendment to Senate Bill 1017. Is there any discussion? Any objection?
Yes.
Call the roll on the amendment.
I don't care.
That's not an answer.
The amendment you deny is an improvement.
I'm trying to follow the example of Representative Lim at this point. So,
Senator Cruz will be recorded as a no vote.
Senator Brzezinski?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator
Byers? Aye. Okay, Senator Walker.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1017 as amended for the floor of the Senate with a due pass for recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Bill 1017 as amended for the Senate floor as with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Would you please call the roll? Oh,
you.
Senator Byers.
Thank,
okay.
Thank you.
Yet.
Cool, huh? Senator Walker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Byers?
No.
Chair Byers?
I'm assuming she took my laughing at me.
All right. Okay.
I think you're carrying this one, Jen.
I think I'm carrying this one. Close the work session. And for anybody who's still here, Senate Bill 864 is a bill that has a good purpose but has a lot of problems in the in how it would be carried out. So the bar has agreed to work with the sponsors of Senate Bill 864. This will not be reappearing before us again this session, but they will be working on it.
Yes, that was my favorite bill of the day.
I know. Thank you very much, committee, and we are adjourned.